Blog Talk Radio.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Will a strong and united America still be a force for freedom and prosperity around the world?
America has created the longest peacetime economic expansion in our history.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Good common sense and sound judgment of the American people. And their essential love of justice.
Hi, welcome to the Kudzu Vine, August 16th, 2015. I'm your host, David McLaughlin. Joining me as always, welcome Catherine Smith.
Greetings, everyone, from Atlanta.
And welcome Tim Shiflett.
Good evening, sir.
All right, little housekeeping, just as we go on the air, as I noticed the studio came on, we have opened up a 15-minute window instead of a 60-minute window. Now, I know Blog Talk Radio gives us a little bit of override, but if this ends up getting split into two segments or somehow, my apologies, and Tim and Catherine are just learning this too because it just came up in front of me and I had to get it out to somebody somehow. But in the meantime, let's see what we can do, and I'll be working on the back end. Tim and Catherine, right off the bat, I guess today we learned overnight that Julian Bond, the first African-American state representative or state legislator since Reconstruction in Georgia, passed away, also a civil rights leader, ran for Congress. I'm not sure if there's other offices he held. I guess my first memory of him was he and John Lewis were the top two candidates for Congress when White Fowler vacated that seat to run for Senate. And I think Julian Bond was considered the front runner, and John Lewis was kind of the underdog and upset him in a runoff. And I think that's kind of hard to believe for a lot of folks now thinking about John Lewis, but at that time that was the case. Catherine, what are some of your thoughts?
Well, I'm just very, very sad. I had so much respect for Julian Bond and was really fortunate. Just a few years ago, I went to the 40th anniversary of the Southern Poverty Law Center. They had a weekend celebration, and I was fortunate enough to make it into the session, which was overcrowded and standing room only, in which Julian Bond did a session on music in the movement and music in the civil rights movement. And it was absolutely amazing. Just listening to him talk about all the different, not just music from black culture, but white culture as well, and how what the impact was on the movement and how it was incorporated into the movement. It was really amazing. And he was so generous and so kind. And I actually was sitting right behind him and had a chance to just sort of chat with him. And it was really one of the greatest, information sessions I've ever attended, and I've been to a lot. And I'm just very sad. He was a great man, very kind soul, and leader of people, and great intellectual, and I'm just very sad. And he was very young, really, only 75. So I'm sad today about that. But
yes, Tim, what
we had him for all the time that we did. So.
Tim, what are some of your thoughts?
Well, my earliest memories of him go back a little further. He was, one of the chief architects of SNCC, of course, and one of its officers. But he burst on the scene statewide here when he was elected to the state legislature, I believe, in 1964. And then they refused to seat him because
I think it was 66.
Because they said of his opposition to the Vietnam War. And a year later, the court system forced them to seat him because they said that they had violated his First Amendment rights. So he became a fixture, and then he burst on the national scene at the 68 Democratic convention with a riveting talk. One delegate even stood up and placed his name in nomination for vice president, which of course he couldn't have been because he was only 28 years old at the time and he had to decline it. He was a great man. He did a lot with the Southern Poverty Law Center, as with Morris Deese, as Catherine has mentioned, and he will be sorely missed. But those guys that were the icons of the movement now are, you know, they're getting older and they're leaving the scene, and it's really a sad thing to see.
He was elected in 65 and then was sworn in 1967. So, just to correct the record.
Yes. Well, obviously that's a huge, you know, political obituary for this year. Well, let's move on to another topic, some happier news. And listeners of the Kudzu Vine, y'all know that we bemoan, you know, local state house, state senate type elections in Georgia and has been going for the Democrats. And we had some, unfortunately, rare good news this past week. And Taylor Bennett won the runoff for District 80. This was a district who's kind of a swing district, was held by a Republican who had switched parties, but at the presidential level has been Democratic. So one of those very purple districts. Not many of those exist seemingly at any level around the country, but District 80 in Georgia was one of those. And Taylor Bennett, a former Georgia Tech quarterback and now lawyer, won this thing, a real up-and-comer. Tim, how big a win is this for Georgia Democrats?
Well, it's a very big win. For one thing, it stops the Republicans from having a supermajority on things like constitutional amendments and that sort of thing. And he also becomes the only state representative, in the Democratic Party, at least in this state, that will be representing a district that Mitt Romney carried. So it's a huge thing. I imagine he'll be a prime target for the Republicans next year, but as we talked about before we went on the air, we're hopeful because of where the district is located and the changing demographics in that district that perhaps the Democrats will now be able to hold that particular district. So it was really good to get a win like that. It was a long time in coming, wasn't it?
Certainly so. And Catherine, from my understanding, is part of the district, or probably majority of the district's in DeKalb. Part is in Fulton, and why that is important is there's some, you know, pieces of legislation in which the county delegation has a lot of power, and his win swayed the power for Fulton County into Democratic majority control, and that's more important than it would be in most other counties, because of the fact that you have some cities trying to form. Have some people always want to try to break Milton County away, the old Milton County, who begged to be into Fulton County during the Depression, or maybe it was before that, in the Boweevil years. And so now that kind of changes the dynamics of that. How big is a win at the local level?
I think it's huge because, you know, they in redistricting, they redistrict a bunch of Senate and House seats to give little tiny bits and pieces in Fulton County, so that the Republicans could have the majority in the Fulton County delegation. I mean, it was obvious that that's what they were trying. I mean, there's just like little, you know, one or two precincts in Fulton, so that they could get that majority. But now, and they had it, and now they've lost it again. So I think that's a big thing. And like you said, there's a lot that goes on in Fulton County that where we need that Democratic weight. So that's good. I was hopeful that Taylor Bennett would win. I was just really surprised at how decidedly he won with 55% of the vote and early. It was, you know, I think that his opponent made the call before 10 o'clock on Tuesday night. It was very early. So very happy. We're very happy here in Fulton County about that, or in Metro Atlanta. I mean, all over Georgia. But
yeah, probably Waycross and Albany and all points in between. Just a little housekeeping. If we get cut off, I will immediately start a new episode as fast as I can. If y'all dial right back in, we'll finish this thing up with a break. It'll be in two parts, and I sincerely apologize. I'm not sure why this thing got set for 15 instead of 60. But that's our little audible game plan, if you will, if we end up, you know, cutting off early. But we'll see what happens here in a few minutes. And Lowell Fell will be with us in the next little bit, too, about 7:20. So either 20 minutes into this one or probably at the top of the next one, if you will. Well, let's move on to another topic. And, you know, about 3 weeks ago, I bemoaned the fact, I think David Wissing was our guest, on how we hadn't had a lot of those stories that are just so bizarre that you just don't know where they came from. But we got one of those this week. People are used to Talladega, Alabama for fast action, hard-hitting action. You know, usually that's at the raceway when they have the big NASCAR race. But they had a little action going on at some point in the past there, two-part pieces. The mayor of Talladega, Alabama, was having an affair, and he and his lady decided to make a video of this. And her husband found out about it, and he came after the mayor with a weapon. And there's a mugshot of him, too. And if you look at these gentlemen, they are a safely, I guess you'd call, octogenarians. How far have we gone with these people making videos in the bedroom, if you will? We know Hulk Hogan made one, and he got in trouble, not for what he was doing in the bed, but talking after. Now these two are well over you know, retirement age, but they hadn't retired from that activity on video. Catherine, what do we think of all this?
I can't hear you. Did we?
You can't hear me. Well, what do you think of all this? I'm leaving it to you, Catherine. Comment.
I just can't believe that people still think they can tape themselves and that it's not going to get out anywhere. And what? I mean, just looking at these pictures, it's just crazy. But he's claiming that it was about the election, not about the affair. No.
That's quite an excuse. Tim, you buying that one?
Well, actually, I read a story in their local paper online down there. I'm ashamed to say.
Aniston Star, the one.
The mayor was 74, is in his fifth term. The other gentleman was 71. I'm going to assume that his wife is in that age bracket. And apparently what happened is she owns a liquor store down there.
Oh, yeah, that's bad.
And her husband, without her knowing it, put a taping device in the back of it, according to her. And it takes her and the mayor having a little toddy ta or whatever back in the back of that business. I do wish to go on record now as saying that I hope I never have to see this particular tape. Watching 70-year-olds. Would do well. It's just not my thing. The mayor needs to resign and make Viagra commercials or something. I don't know what else to say here.
Well, I think I'm reading the story again now. I think the best part is that so the mayor was attacking the other guy, and he tried to flee on a bicycle. I'm sorry.
It's such a bizarre situation.
hey, this guy's active. He's riding bicycles. He's able to video himself there. You know, he's a real go-getter.
3 years in prison in the 90s for defrauding the city.
Oh, and he still come back. And he, is this, are these five consecutive terms, or did he win?
No. Yeah, four. He's been his fourth consecutive and fifth overall.
So he had the prison term between 1 and 2 through 4.
Right.
Good gracious. Or 2 through 5. And that is, Edwin Edwards, this guy and him are just two peas in a pod. You know, nothing holds them back. Maybe he can get a reality show too, like Eddie Edwards did. apparently it sounds like we're still recording. I'll try to check what I can. So that's good news. I don't know when that'll end. We'll see. And then, but we'll move on to another topic before Lowell comes on, which should be any minute. And the next topic would be, there is a book coming out by Claire McCaskill, and Politico got a little excerpt from it, and it was really interesting, and it kind of goes back to an age-old discussion that we have here on the Kudzu Vine, and I think it's probably one of the places where Tim and I disagree on strategy probably as much as anywhere. And in there, Claire McCaskill said she helped Todd Akin win just so she could beat him. You know, they polled and they saw that he would be the weakest candidate, and she wanted to get him. Now, of course, I advocate that strategy of the weakest opponent. But then, of course, there's a chance he could have won that race, and he would have probably been the most extreme senator. So there was that risk. Tim, what did you think of Claire McCaskill's strategy, her admitting it? Was it dangerous for Missouri and the country? What are your thoughts?
Well, this has been out there for a little while, rumored for a while, although she never confirmed it until now. You know, Richard Nixon was a master of this. In 1972, his people did everything they could behind the scenes to get rid of people like Muskie Humphrey, and especially Ted Kennedy, who Nixon just lived in morbid fear of. And the beneficiary of this tampering was George McGovern, who was exactly the candidate that Nixon wanted to face. And we know what happened there. I do have a question, though, for Senator McCaskill, David. And it's the same question I've asking you. If she had done all of this and Akin had won, and now what would she have said then? And that's why I don't like stuff like this. If you've got a really dangerous candidate in a race, you want to kill them dead politically as quickly as possible. Fine senator and all that, but I think that she put her own needs and her own political survival ahead of the country. Right there.
Well, and the reason that I defend this strategy now is because the Republican Party has become so monolithic with such groupthink that a moderate in the Republican Party votes about 1% different than an ultra-conservative. You know, if it was a moderate was somebody that was like 50-50, you know, they voted with Democrats a third of the time and voted with the conservative Republicans a third of the time, and then a third of the time they split the difference. Or you had someone that was going to be ultra-conservative 99% of the time, there'd be a difference
mm-hmm.
there. But to me, like, you know, everybody says, oh, Donny Isaacson's so much different than Shaxby Chambliss. You lay their voting records together, they're like within 1% of each other. They're
that
all,
1%
all
got
to,
the Civil Rights Act passed, for instance.
Yeah.
You know, so it means something, Dave. It does.
Well, I have a different opinion.
What do you think, Catherine?
Well,
I was getting you in there.
I think primaries are for the party. And I think that I'm not crazy about the opposite party monkeying with them
mm-hmm.
intentionally.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, I prefer closed primaries. I think they should be for the party to decide what candidate they want to put forth to run against the other party. And so for that reason, I'm uncomfortable with the idea of you know, monkeying around with this. Who is Claire McCaskill to say that he was the worst candidate in the bunch and she wanted to run against him? I think it's sort of
the most beatable. Yeah.
The most beatable, whatever, you know what?
Yeah.
And who are we to say that he's the worst candidate? I mean, I I'm sure you know how I feel about the guy. But still, I think I think primaries are for the party to select their candidate, and I think it's I don't want to say unethical. I think it's it's not very sportsmanlike.
I agree with your basic premise, Catherine, that primaries are for that party, and I've never crossed over and tried to get into somebody else's primary. I stay out of that. That's not my business. So I agree with you on that point. Now, I can root for somebody on the other side.
Oh, absolutely.
Because I think they're the most beatable person. And then I don't know how you then not vote in there and then affect process. But I will ask y'all this question. You know, Claire McCaskill still in the U.S. Senate. She may run again. Will this be used against her effectively when she runs again? And I guess it was 2010, so it would be 16, wasn't it, or if my math bad?
No, that's right. If it was 2016.
Yeah, will it be used against her coming up soon? Tim, what do you think?
Very possibly it could be used against her. I believe the Republicans have learned their lesson about who to run up there in that state. And if I'm not mistaken, isn't Roy Blunt up there next year and not her? Or am I wrong?
Maybe. I'm trying to remember when she ran. Maybe she ran in 12 and she's up in 18.
I was thinking 12, yeah. But I could be wrong.
And that's probably right, because probably she wouldn't have survived in a off-year election like 10, because she was already kind of a tough race. But the fact that it was a presidential year probably helped her.
I'm going to look that up.
Strange state.
I just looked it up.
Probably
she ran in 2012.
Oh,
yeah, that's
okay.
Why she survived. But, you know, Missouri is such an unusual state. It's, you know, St. Louis, Kansas City, and a farmer's only ad in between.
David,
it's such a state that people don't realize how rural it is other than those two cities.
David, before our guest comes on, I want to tell you a situation where that blew up in somebody's face, and it happened right here in Georgia in 1966 when the Republicans got the bright idea that they could win the governorship with Bo Calloway running. All they needed to do was to face Lester Maddox. So they came over en masse and voted in the Democratic primary for him, and he was the nominee. Ellis Arnold ran as an independent, and it got thrown into the state house, even though Calloway got the most votes, and of course they selected Maddox. It can blow up in your face, and look what we all ended up with, Lester Maddox.
Yes, I mean, there are situations where it's turned completely different. You know, the beatable candidate turns not as beatable, or the fringe person, whatever it may be. So, it just in this case, it worked for her. I just am surprised she admitted it when she might be planning to run again. Maybe this is a sign she's not planning to run again because she knows that she'll have a tough time, and you know she got two terms, you know, out of a career, and that's not bad. You know, 12 years in the U.S. Senate, she'll definitely get a you know, a big page when she retires and whatnot. Well, I will say this. Lowell Feld, if you are listening in, because of this time issue, it may not be letting you in, and I deeply apologize. So if you're listening, that's what's going on. I'll try to check my email. But we'll go ahead with another topic until then, and that would be this past week, Ted Cruz was giving out awards. Now, I didn't know he was the Academy of you know, Screen Guild actors or the Grammys. I didn't know that, you know, he just randomly gave out awards, but apparently he does.
And he gave out some type of political courage award, y'all may know the exact name, to Justin Harris, the Arkansas state rep, who gave away his adopted children because he thought they were possessed by demons. There's so many levels to this question. A, why is Ted Cruz giving out awards? B, why would he give out an award to somebody so controversial and somebody that made the news in such a way? You know, what do you make of this, Catherine?
Well, he ended up not giving the award. There was a added, you know, edit at the end of that article. So he did not give out the award. Can't even begin to, you know, it's just so, first of all, who decides who gets these awards? And why are they important? Why are they necessary? And did none of Ted Cruz's people do any background check on any of this stuff to find out about this situation with this rehoming, which has now been made illegal in Arkansas? And are we really at the point where we can, praise someone for their, you know, living in the faith when they, on one side of their lives, but then on the other side, they, you know, give up their children because they're possessed and send them back to a abuser? I just find so much trouble with this whole idea. Just because he's, you know, against gay marriage and against abortion, somehow that makes him living in the faith, no matter what else he does in his life.
I mean, honestly, that when the foster worker came up for the home visit, the kid should have said, "We want to be returned because this guy's possessed with stupidity and delusions of grandeur." That's who they, you know, they should want to return him. Oddball. Well, Tim, I'm going to get your thoughts on it, but I want to make a little statement. If somebody's tuned in for Lowell Feld, I just got an email. He cannot get in because of the switchboard glitch. I've apologized. I'll apologize again. So it is not Lowell's fault. It's probably mine with maybe a little bit of Blog Talk Radio mixed in. I'll take more of the blame. But it's definitely not our friend Lowell Feld. We hope to have him on very soon. Tim, what are your thoughts on Justin Harris, state rep, getting an award?
Well, let me say something first about what you just said. I have been trying to log in to our switchboard and cannot do so. So I'm not certain we're on the air. just wanted to throw that out there for y'all's consideration.
Why don't we do this then? Tim, we're going to get your thoughts, and then we're going to close up shop for the day. We've done 30 good minutes. And then if it's there 30 minutes, great. If it was there however long, I think we've been strong throughout this thing. And we're going to come back and get this thing right next week. And I'm going to stop scheduling shows on my phone as opposed to the computer. I think that's part of the way I went wrong. I thought my iPhone was just doing a great job. And, you know, the screen is a lot smaller than a computer. So, like I said, I'm taking more of the blame. But, Tim, your thoughts on Justin Harris and Ted Cruz giving awards, and then we'll close off.
As Catherine mentioned, this award was not given. The dinner organizers, along with the Cruz campaign, got wind of what was going on and stopped it. The county party was who that he was speaking at. It was not even a state dinner. It was a county dinner. They gave these particular awards to two of their own, or were going to. And they just issued a press release stating the awards would be presented at a later date. So it looks like Senator Cruz dodged a proverbial bullet. that's about it.
Ted Cruz's campaign just kind of not going much anywhere. But, of course, everybody's Republican campaign is his campaign is hurt because of Donald Trump. Well, Tim, Catherine, been a good show. I apologize again for any for this technical issue, and we'll come back at it again next week, and hopefully Lowell Feld can come on in. If not, we'll get him as soon as he possibly can. And once again, my apologies, but been the Kudzu Vine.
Good night, guys.
Good night.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Will a strong and united America still be a force for freedom and prosperity around the world?
America has created the longest peacetime economic